In the Game of Thrones, even the humblest pieces have wills of their own. Sometimes they refuse to make the moves you've planned for them. Welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to George R. R. Martin and Fantasy Flight Games for making this possible, CardGameDB for our hosting, Josh Woodward for this CC-licensed music, and you, our listeners, for making it all worthwhile. This is Season 4.5.
Welcome back, guys, to episode 151 of Two Champs and a Chump. Congratulations if you are still listening after the travesty that was episode 150.
Hey, you know, I'm just the idea man. I don't know what happened with that.
Yeah. I mean, it was technical issues. Some in our control, some beyond our control, but for it to all happen at the same time that day was a mess. So if you stuck with us through that, and even better, if you bothered to listen to the recording of the live episode that I put up to the feed last week, more power to you. I tried to warn people that was a pretty straight shot, cutting out some, you know, silences and pauses for technical issues. So it was rough, to say the least.
Yeah, it was rough, but it was still awesome. Okay, our hearts were in the right place.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. It would have been, I don't know. We would have to change the format, I guess, if we were to try and make it like a easier listen part of it. I don't know. Easier listening version, I should say.
Yeah, we'll kind of brainstorm it. We may try it again, because I think the folks that were with us in Twitch later, when we did have the video and the audio and, you know, everything working at once, I think had a good time. So if we can cut out all the errors before that and just get to that point from the get-go, I think it'd be good. So be on the lookout. We may try it again. Later. Definitely later.
Yeah, we'll bring it back harder, better, faster, stronger. Yeah.
So I wanted to also welcome our listeners to episode 151 and, you know, kind of a soft relaunch for the show with a new logo and, you know, and kind of acknowledge our hosts and, thank you guys for participating and whatnot, kind of turn a new page or turn over a new leaf, as you might say. And then Kyle had a family emergency and was unable to attend our recording tonight. So instead, we had to scramble. We found ourselves a guest host. You know, I'm pretty surprised that he deigned to be on this show.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I know. This is a big news. We got him in on this chapter pack review, which I was really not expecting. And, you know, we're really grateful. He brings a lot of gravitas to the episode. Mm-hmm. And
it's a 2C. Yeah, it's a 2C, 1C exclusive is what it is.
Yeah. Okay. You will hear this player nowhere else.
You don't get this kind of fame on your show without having some serious clout in the world. Mm-hmm. And this is what 2C1C brings you.
Yeah, we actually bring you this week the only man to have won both a Melee and a Joust World Championship, Mr. Brett Zeiler.
You know, until you said that, everyone thought it was Greg.
Yeah, totally. I am really all for disappointing the fans. And backpedaling, instead of turning over a new leaf, we've got the cast from 6 months ago.
Retro. Yeah.
Kind of like how when I posted episode 150, I accidentally typed the link for 105.
Really, Will?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
You're an embarrassment.
Yep.
It happens.
I caught it. Man. Thankfully, I got up to check the site before I went to work that morning and logged on, saw people post that about the error, so I was able to fix it at about like 7 a.m. the next morning, but I still felt pretty silly.
I mean, it was just one of those things. I mean, we needed a cherry on top.
Yeah, we really needed a kick there.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of kickers, I think we do have a new chapter pack review, like I mentioned. The first pack in the Conquest and Defiance cycle, Spoils of War, should be on its way to everybody now. And CardGameDB has the spoilers up in nice, shiny resolution here. So I think we're going to go through and give you some of our first blush thoughts and reactions on these cards. And I'm going to definitely throw out that particular caveat that we have not had the chance to play with them yet, which is how we wind up in situations like Gaston Grey and Longship Maiden's Bane. So.
And I've only actually seen like three of these cards.
Beforehand?
Before, right now.
Yeah. Then you really get to have that first blush reaction for the listeners.
Although that you guys pan Maiden's Bane is crazy.
I did not say that Maiden's Bane was bad.
I did not say bad either. I think I gave it somewhere in the like C to C plus range. Honestly, I just wasn't thinking about it with the old way agenda. I was thinking about it just in other just Greyjoy decks in general. Okay, you know, that has some utility. I'll probably throw in a copy. But it's not, you know, great. So that was my issue.
Fair enough.
Anyways.
Yeah. But anyway, for the listeners, we've got our A, B, C, D, and F rating system in place, familiar to many of you from the U.S. school system. Though I did want to throw out a little note on that and point out that this is kind of, or at least I view it as kind of like the traditional view on that grading system, not the current U.S. view on that system, where A is average, and anything below that is eh. No, in my mind, this system is C is an average card, B is above average, and A is really good. So I just wanted to throw that distinction out for people as far as how I look at that scale.
Well, good.
Nice sense that we always looked at it.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's how we had been, but I'd seen a couple comments here and there about rating systems and such before. So I just wanted to clarify that. Our scale from Mira Reed at the A range down to Without His Beard in the F range. How about we reinitiate Brett and let him read our first card?
That's a long one. The first card in the pack is one of the new agendas, one that I've actually seen before, Conquest. When you announce your agenda, name a house. Ignore the out-of-house gold penalty when playing cards or placing setup cards with that affiliation. Your out-of-house character and attachment cards with that affiliation gain prized one while leaving play. Your out-of-house location cards with that affiliation gain prized two while leaving play.
That's sexy.
All the text.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, it seems like a better alliance.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as long as you just want a certain... I was about to say splash of another house.
Cherry-pick specific cards.
Yeah, cherry-picking is probably a better idea. Because really, if you're just splashing a couple, then you're probably just better off with the alliance plot.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be fine. Maybe one or two of the appropriate kingdoms or something like that. So what is kind of the sweet spot for cherry picking, do you guys think? Like a quarter of the deck?
Probably something like that. Okay. I mean, if it's up to like a half of the deck, maybe even a third of the deck, you probably want to just go straight up Alliance agenda.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a gamble, but it definitely is a bit more flexible. I mean, there's only a downside on Conquest if they can remove your stuff. So it really, you know, kind of puts the onus on the opponent to make that penalty count, which is interesting. And this doesn't have the treaty trait, which
it
I think
does not.
Yeah, is worth a look as well. Not that I see too many people playing the actual treaty agendas that often for that to come up, but hey, you never know.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm not really sure what to think. A part of me says, it's absolutely better than Alliance. But then there's that other side of the coin that could really kick you in the ass. But it just depends. I could definitely see using it for locations more. Those are a little harder to get rid of, but we're seeing removal for locations, you know, start to turn up in the game right now. It'll be interesting. I mean, I don't know. Seems good.
Yeah, you know, part of me wants to look at it and say, oh yeah, you know, we're going to see some creative stuff come out of this because it allows that cross-house splashing and such. And, you know, then it makes me wonder, well, wait a minute, but that's already possible. We've got the treaty to the blanks and the Alliance agenda right now. So it really doesn't offer anything new in that regard. So I don't know. I don't know if it will change things up all that much.
I mean, it doesn't offer anything new. It just offers a different way to do something that can already be done.
Yeah, yeah. So it was something I was really excited about when I first saw it spoiled and just had that initial thrill. But now, you know, I'm sure still going to try it out to get a feel for whether I like this drawback more. But I don't know that it opens up new space quite like I was hoping for.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, if you're using characters, okay, you know the downside there. If you're using locations, you kind of got to pick and choose what you're using. You know what I mean? You can't sit there and choose Rainus's Hill or something, because when that leaves play, it's going to give your opponent 2 power. I mean, yeah. I guess you can. You still can do that. I mean, that's fine if you've got the deck for it, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, it does actually hamper certain builds. You won't be able to use that stuff that discards itself, yeah. Or kills, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what kind of rating, then, do you guys give it?
Oh, this is so hard.
I mean, probably just a C-ish. I mean, I don't see it being hugely popular, aside from maybe, like, letting you play the Red Viper out of house.
Yeah. I mean, and that's still a strong play.
Yeah, that could be fun. That could be fun. Or just some casting gray shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean, you're not playing other agendas. You're potentially giving your opponent power. I mean, it's nothing new. It's just a different way to do something we can already do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got it. Oh, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think I would probably put it in the B range. Like I said, we've got the agendas that do similar beneficial things right now, and they've kind of always been in that tier 2 to tier 1.5 range, and they've never quite been really at the top of the game. And I don't know that Conquest changes that a whole lot, but I might rate it a little above them, because, you know, like say you're playing Treaty of the North or whatever, and you're spotting them 5 power, that's essentially like they've managed to remove 5 of your cards if you were running Conquest, which is, I don't know, a pretty big gap there in my mind when you're comparing those. So I think Conquest definitely is going to make the opponent work a little harder. So I think it's better, but not great.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a C. I think that it's you're really going to see it in those decks that just want to splash something. Just a little something here. I don't really need you know, an agenda to do anything else. I just want to run these few cards from out of house and not have to worry about it. So, you know.
Okay. Daryl, you want the next one?
All right. Yes, I shall. The next one is another agenda. It is Defiance. It says, your plot deck must contain exactly 10 plots. Each of your plot cards gains prized one while moving to your used pile. Interesting.
Man, that just seems pretty mediocre to me.
Really? Oh, man, I think it seems really cool. I mean, the effect is definitely very different.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, the effect is different. You know, having more plots in your plot deck is interesting. And I'm not talking even from, like, plot cycling. I'm mainly talking about just, you know, you got to play your Valor. Well, now how long until I can get Valor back?
Yeah, it's a double.
It's like a million turns.
Yeah.
I know. You really, I mean, it's going to be interesting to have some kind of those, that toolboxy plot deck. You know, you can do some fun stuff. I don't know.
I mean, I think that's where it's going to be really strong is somebody like, look at Greg, who I wish could be on the show right now, but he is, despite saying he wanted back in on Chapter Pack Reviews, he is currently on his honeymoon, so many happy wishes to him. But I think Defiance is right up his alley, a guy who starts by constructing the plot deck and then builds the draw deck around that, and having those extra options is huge. Now it's so much easier to throw in that Burning Bridges or that Forgotten Plans that you just want to completely disrupt a particular situation, but you don't necessarily want to use all the time.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I could see... I could see both sides of the spectrum. Heavy control using this plot, using this agenda, and I could see hardcore aggressive using the agenda as well. It's going to be interesting.
I think aggressive has the edge a little bit. You know, since they don't want to draw that game out, that drawback of not being able to loop back around on the Valor, like you mentioned, you know, for those additional turns, is probably never going to touch them. Versus, you know, some kind of like Martell control deck, that could potentially be an issue for them.
Maybe. I don't know. The ones rolling around now have the board wipe already, you know. You can,
right.
You can add some of those extra plots.
It wiping out of your deck as well.
Yeah.
I mean, which is awfully popular right now, but I mean, you're going to be even more reliant on getting that up and running.
Yeah. Yeah. I always got to get it up and running.
So why does it not look all that exciting to you? I am kind of curious. You kind of dropped that, and then I disagreed.
I was supposed to mean, it's like you guys said, like you play your Valor, and then it's a million turns, and you can play your Valor again. It gives you more options, but I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I guess if it's like an aggressive deck that wasn't already playing an agenda that's not landing no agenda, because I think they'd rather have their no agenda stuff than playing with three extra plots, and I can't think of any decks that do that.
What about the prized? Does that matter at all to you, giving your opponent that power as the game runs on? Potentially, you know, 10 or more power?
Yeah, it can.
Not terribly concerned about that, unless you are doing plot cycling, which I don't think you would want to.
Okay.
Because then it's giving your opponent multiple power a turn.
Yeah, so it's mainly just the, I don't know, the extra it gives you to keep you out of that rotation that really holds it back for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and again, with the aggressive thing, not only are they less worried about looping around on plots, but they're probably only giving the opponent, you know, 3 power out of it or something like that. So,
yeah. I mean, maybe if you're a Barrow deck that isn't playing Noble Cause, that wants to rush and isn't already playing an agenda, then maybe you play this.
If you're not at Noble Cause or probably, what, Knights of the Realm for the draw.
Yeah, and, I mean, I don't know how many decks there are like that now, but I can't imagine many.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of an agenda. Just seeing it at the first glance, it's always going to be hard to tell how it's going to perform, especially, I mean, this is the first pack of the cycle. You know, it depends on the cards that come out that really support it. I mean, yes, there are already cards out, but obviously they designed this cycle with both of these agendas in mind. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting. I guess at first glance here, I'm just going to give it a C. And that's because, well, for one, we're giving our opponents power every turn, and you just the game hinges on valor more often than it doesn't. And, you either got to hold off from playing it, or if you're forced to play it early, you're probably SOL. So,
Brett,
what do you give it?
C minus, and I'm being generous because it is a very unique card.
It is very unique, and that pulls it up for me. Man, I want to give it a split rating, so instead I guess I'll average it out and give it like a B minus, where I want to give it a split rating because I want to give it a rating of like a C or a C minus for the average everyman players of the game, who are going to get themselves into tight spots because of those two drawbacks. But in the hands of, again, somebody like Greg, who can really build that tight plot deck and can really get a feel for the right way to time and pace themselves on those, I think it has the chance to be like an A. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand that. All right, let's move on to the next one, Will.
Okay, let's see. This one is a Baratheon character. This is Seasoned Smuggler. He's a one drop for 2 strength. He only has a power icon, but it does have a naval enhancement. He's a smuggler and an ally. He has prized 1 and response after you win a power challenge when Seasoned Smuggler participated. Choose and stand a prized card. That seems... I mean,
that could be cool with Conquest.
Well, Conquest, sadly, they only gain prized as they leave play.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I know.
That's way worse then.
That's what I thought at first, too, and I was like, awesome, but no. And even like the Blackfish that we've seen spoiled later on in the cycle does the same thing, just gives it to him as they leave play. So. But still, he's one drop for 2 strength with the naval enhancement, even though he only has 1 icon. That's pretty solid. Prized 1 doesn't seem huge.
Yeah, and I think the key here is stand a prized card. That could be pretty big. So that means, you know, location, attachment, character, whatever comes out of the cycle, it's prized that you control.
Yeah.
You could really rock and roll.
My guess is it's going to be a location that winds up being what you want to stand within most of the time. Just seems like locations lately have really been the, I don't know, heavy hitter in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, he's solely dependent on additional cards coming out.
Maybe. He is a huge boon for an existing card, and that makes me pretty pumped. Well, to play it, sad to face it. That Salador Saan that lets you pay the extra 2 gold when you play a smuggler?
Yeah.
Like, I would pay 3 to get a 2 strength body with, you know, a little bit of upside and blow up a location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much else I could say about this. We've, time and time again, Stand has proven to be a fantastic ability, whether it comes from an event even, let alone a repeatable thing on the board. So... Yeah. I mean, I have half a mind to give it an A. I don't know what else is going to come out. I know that whatever it's called, Old Wick, that's coming out is prized, I believe. And I mean, why would you run that out of house?
Yeah.
So this card could be nasty. Plus, you're Baratheon. You're going to win power challenges. That's not a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks pretty sweet to me too. Man, I don't know if I'm willing to give him an A yet without seeing all the things that he will be able to interact with, but you're right. Stand is huge. So I'm tentatively giving him a B. He's a really nice weenie, and I think that ability is very likely to be very powerful.
I mean, I'll give him a conditional C plus, and that if there is some kind of badass prize card that you want to get multiple uses out of, he could get better. I mean, as is, he's just a well-costed guy who's going to stand himself.
Yeah. Too bad he doesn't have more than one icon to really do something with that.
Yeah.
All right.
Brett, we're back to you.
Let's see what is next. Would that be Bitterbridge?
Indeed.
Bitterbridge, it's a unique Baratheon location. It is one cost with the Stronghold trait and is immune to character abilities. And any phase, Neil Bitterbridge should choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character cannot trigger its abilities. That's neat.
Hmm. Yeah. It's not bad. I definitely wouldn't say that. It's cheap. It's immune to character abilities, so it's safe from being blown up by several cards.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of does a reasonable impression of the Lannister Iron Throne.
Yeah, like
kind
moderately
of
adjacent to.
Yeah.
you could muck up some things with it for sure. And I mean, at one cost, you know, hard to go wrong if the meta is right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that it can stop. You know, it could stop Cersei from kind of going crazy.
Yeah, that was my first thought.
Some stuff, yeah. That's my initial thought for sure. You know, or if somebody's still playing Conclaves and whatnot. Certainly anything that wants to be able to trigger its ability and challenges is definitely going to be something Bitterbridge stops.
Mm-hmm. Anything that triggers its ability multiple times per round or per turn, I guess.
Right, per phase. Right.
It's until the end of the phase.
Yeah, just phase. Any phase, at least, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, even if you run up against Long Lance or something, it really only stops those shenanigans for one phase, and then they can go back to popping stuff in and out and standing. So, mm-hmm. Again, I still think challenges would probably be the phase I would want to use that during. But I don't know. It's interesting to me, of course, it's an any phase, like, preventative effect. It stops you from triggering it rather than canceling it like the Iron Throne.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts a really big emphasis on comes into play abilities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people maybe, or at least I've gotten the vibe before, that a lot of people don't enjoy the comes into play abilities stuff as much because they feel it detracts from, like, the challenge phase. But stuff like Bitterbridge really encourages playing those because it can't do a thing to stop them.
Nope.
It won't touch enemy Informer.
Yeah, but it can stop Castellan once it's already in play.
Yeah, yeah. The Castellan will get one trigger and then it'll be stuck.
Right. I mean, that could be decent. You could do some pre-plot shenanigans with some of those maesters who save themselves or another player, yeah. Or another character rather, or Makoro or something.
Ooh.
I mean,
I'm glad you mentioned saves, Daryl. It could stop saves being used. You could use it pre-plot.
Oh, yeah, for dupes,
Yeah, to keep a save from being used, then reveal Valor.
Yeah.
Or, again, you can do that in challenges.
So,
keeps from using Windermere or whatever.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could have some application, for sure. And then, heck, what if you find some synergy with that other guy that we were just talking about? I don't know. Way to stand it and hit something else.
Bitterbridge.
Oh, that's right. Well, maybe there'll be a card that'll give it prized.
You never know.
You never know.
But play it. Well, shoot.
All right.
I was about to make the conquest mistake, but nope.
Nope, can't do it as a legal.
Nope.
Anyways, off the bat, I'm going to go ahead and give it a C. It's not a cancel. It's nice preventative measure. I don't see it defining an archetype or being the backbone of a deck, so it's just going to get a little C.
I think it's going to be my first non-C of the pack, and I'm going to give it a D. I don't see it making decks really ever.
Yeah. Baratheon has gotten a couple of these types of preventative effects before. Brienne is by far the best out of those.
And they have, like, the painted table.
Right, right. But I would say Bitterbridge is probably the next best. I think I like it better than, say, the painted table. You know, because you can target specifically what you want to not do something versus the painted table can get eaten up by whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still not great, even though it's, like, the second best of those effects.
Right. Well, there are targets to hit, though. You know, Khal Drogo also, like, some of those draw dudes, the Blackfish.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just not crazy. It's just kind of there, that's not bad.
It's just kind of there. So I'm feeling a C for Bitterbridge myself.
All right. Next one.
All right, D, I think you're up.
All right, now we have an event. It is Rite of Conquest, and it is House Baratheon only, and it is prized 1. It reads, response. After you win a challenge in which you control a participating lord or lady character, the losing player must choose one location he or she controls. Then, choose and take control of a different, non-limited location under that player's control. That could be very cool.
That seems very powerful.
What's that other direct assault, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a direct assault. Right? Which has the limitation of a 2-cost location, I think. But it replaces claim. I can't remember quite how that works. But so this kind of would allow you to take something that costs more. So if they're playing a bunch of stuff, you know, you're going against a target player who's playing like a Dragon Pit, an Aegon's Hill, a Meraxes, you know what I mean? They kind of have to choose there, and you could potentially take control of something kind of good.
Yeah, there's some pluses and minuses to that claim thing, because you could snatch a House of Dreams with direct assault, because it is claim replacement, nothing's immune to claim at the moment. But this, I think, is definitely an easier trigger, since it's any challenge, as long as you have a lord or lady. Like, this is House Baratheon. They've got lords and ladies in spades. That'll be easy.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, Direct Assault doesn't have a cost limitation. It's just a non-unique location control by those equipment.
Oh, but it's non-unique, though. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the attacking character has to attack alone, right?
But they get plus 2. He gets plus 2, yes.
Okay. So, this potentially could be really good. It could be decent. I mean, it just depends, I guess, what you're trying to go after, and the meta at the time. You know,
The meta right now is pretty location heavy. I mean, there's Pentoshis and Golden Tooth Mines, and brothels, and you know, you mentioned some of the Targ stuff and Red Keep and whatnot floating around. You know, if they've got a couple of those power locations on the board, like, you're almost guaranteed to take one of them. That could be pretty big.
That's true.
Yeah.
And that's also not limited to attacking or defending, so you can do it on either.
Yeah. You know, the more we talk about it, the more I start to like it. I don't like the art, though. That could be better.
Yeah, it's fine.
But I digress. Yeah.
Right, what are we thinking for Rite of Conquest?
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give it a C, just because I don't like the stipulation of my opponent being able to choose one that I can't take control. That's kind of annoying. So I don't know if it's quite as good as some of the other stuff out there. But, I mean, I do like it.
I think it's pretty solid. And especially in the current meta, I think it'll break up a lot of the kind of power combos, so to speak, that people are rocking, or at least some of the cards that really help them get into that dominant position. So I think I would give it a solid B right now.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a B also. The more I got to looking at it, the more I think it compares favorably to Direct Assault.
Yeah.
Your opponent does get to put a force field around one of his locations, but the rest are all open game.
Yeah, and you may be putting them in a pretty tough decision as far as which one they really want to protect.
Mm-hmm. Especially if they have multiples of, like, multiple Golden Tooth mines or...
Yeah. Yeah, if they've got, like, two GTMs and a Pentoshi on the board, like, which one do they protect? Because you're going to be happy with whatever you take.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. All right, William, are you up?
I think so. We move to Greyjoy now with the Enraged Crewman. He's a 3-cost, 3-strength, military and power icon, and he does have a naval on that military. He's a raider with melee, and if you win a challenge in which Enraged Crewman participated by 4 or more strength as the attacker, the challenge is considered unopposed. He seems like a really nice mid-rangey raider. I think that fills another nice slot for the raiders who haven't gotten one of those slots filled in a little while.
Yeah,
melee,
I agree.
Melee's great.
Yeah, God, melee's the tits.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy slides in perfectly to Greyjoy Black Sails, obviously. And now nobody has to run drum beaters anymore. Right, for Greyjoy unopposed.
Thank goodness, because they were playing drum beaters left and right.
Hey, they were back in the day. Rhett knows what's up. You were running drum beaters in that deck.
I played them like once.
In your 2010 championship deck, it is in there.
I absolutely was not.
Really?
I'm sure that deck list is up on the FFG site still.
I guarantee it. I guarantee there wasn't a single drum beater in that deck.
Doesn't it?
It was based on my deck, Daryl, and I was not running drum beaters, so I'm pretty sure Brett did not put it in.
Whatever.
No, but the crewman's great. Like, I wish I had a dime for every time. What's now my brain shutting down on me? The 3-cost choke guy for Greyjoy.
The Spar.
Yeah, the Spar.
Oh,
wish I had
bastard.
Like a quarter for every time the Spar's melee completely screwed up my challenges because I forgot about it. Like, yeah. Melee is a really underrated keyword.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Melee is just bitchin', and then when you add a naval enhancement, it's just that much more bitchin'.
Yeah. Like, and the more they try to defend him, of course, the higher his strength goes, but, like, the easier that potentially becomes to win by 4 if you've got some other boost you can throw in, like an LIV or something. I don't know. It really kind of complicates that math and such. Yeah, I mean, in a good way for you if you're the attacker. I think he'll probably just get a lot of unopposed stuff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could, and, you know, it could add more incentive to run Rise of the Kraken as well. I mean, that's not being played as much.
And melee is definitely great for Old Way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's really solid. He's not insane. He's just solid.
Yeah. So what kind of rating then do you guys give him?
I mean, C-, D+. I mean, he's fine, but Greyjoy unopposed is just kind of eh.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, this card reminds me a lot of the Arbor Guardsman. Very similar, you know, 3-strength, 3-cost, military power. I think they even have the icon on the same thing, the naval enhancement, except for he adds 2 gold. So he's just playing into a theme that you already have.
But not necessarily
the
like, super best theme. Like,
right.
Lenny does have gold as a theme, but that's not the dominant thing you think of when you think Lanny. But it turns out to be surprisingly useful.
Yeah.
So I dig him, and I think, he's good for unopposed, but he's going to help round out some Raider decks and definitely be nice for Black Sails, which I think holds more appeal than unopposed right now.
That's fair.
Yeah. So I think I'm willing to give him like a C+. He's a really solid kind of chuddy type character.
Yeah. God, I wish he was also an Ironborn.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so good. I'm going to give him a B. I really like this card. I know it's, like I said, it's not insane, but it's solid. It's very solid, and it's really going to be amazing in those black sales decks. It's going to be really good.
All right. Moving on to a Greyjoy event. This is the Reaver's Song. It's House Greyjoy only. It is prized one. The response, after you win dominance, discard all locations from play. You cannot play locations for the rest of the game.
That's a long time.
I'd say that is a pretty long time, yeah.
It is a long time, yet still better than Riches of the Reach.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Oh, is that the drop or you can't draw anymore?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I had misread the very first time. I mean, that is, you cannot draw anymore. I thought at first it said by card effects.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps you even from your, like, framework draw.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which sucks.
So, yeah. So, the man, I'll let you talk about it first. Go ahead. Since you read the card.
Oh, me? Oh. I mean, it's a huge flashy effect, and I guess Greyjoy does have some ways around it. But with, Ironmoor. Supported by the Smith can't be played out of Greyjoy, right? That's the one house right. that can't be played out of?
Right.
Yeah, so.
First mates can pop a warship in every turn. If you
That's
win
true.
With them. But I mean, yeah, Ironmoor will be big.
Yeah, I mean, they have some ways around it, but Greyjoy is like one of the location houses, so.
Well, you know, there could be something said for discarding all locations from play, no matter what. I mean, in one of those, in a choke deck, possibly, even though your income is important to you. I mean, there could just be that right turn to play it. I mean, I don't know. I hope this cycle's filled with a little more ways to cheat stuff in. I would only imagine. But not being able to play or not being able to do something the rest of the game is a big cost to pay. And you have to win dominance on top of that.
And give away one power. Which isn't huge,
yeah,
but
no.
I don't know. I've kind of got two thoughts on it. One is that if you can dream up some kind of Greyjoy Knights of the Hollow Hill that is not a characterless deck and thus relying on locations, this starts to look pretty good.
I mean, if you're playing Greyjoy Location Light.
Right. Yeah. Which Hollow Hill potentially makes pretty easy. On the other hand, I kind of think, you know, I remember good old Clown Boat? the deck that, for listeners that may not know what I'm talking about, because the name confused me for a while, too. It's in reference to a phrase a player in Springfield coined who said, "How'd you get all those clowns on that boat?" So much like a clown car, he just packed as many cheap little dudes in the deck as he could and then flipped them out into play with Val ASAP. So it kind of makes me wonder if a deck like that just really doesn't care about its locations because its own resource curve is so low, might be able to play that a little better. I mean, if you're running Val, there's a chance you may flip the Reaver Song and you know, during marshalling and waste it. But on the other hand, if you don't, like, you can probably run it with impunity.
I mean, also keep in mind, Clownboat did play fairly location heavy because they used naval escort and warships to make the characters legitimate threats.
Oh, you're right.
Just little cheap dudes.
I did forget that it was running the escorts and that sort of thing to pump them. So yeah, that particular version may not like Reaver's Song, but it makes me wonder if there might be something similar that could be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of rating do you give a card like this then, Brett?
I mean, it's a huge effect. I feel like I should give it at least like a B minus. I don't know. I mean, discarding all locations from play is big. Like, Favorable Grounds is the only comparable card, and that's only non-limited and costs you 3 influence and. So I don't know. I mean, I'll say B minus. It's a huge effect.
Yeah, it doesn't get much bigger.
Yeah, that is a fat effect. It really, really is. I still don't like the idea of not being able to play something for the rest of the game. Like, you've really got to... This isn't like... I don't feel like you can just pop this in, you know, to any deck that you've got rolling. You've got to kind of have the build for it. I'm going to give it a D. I don't like the idea of not being able to play cards for the rest of the game. And right now, there's not a ton of ways to cheat my locations into play, so...
Yeah, it is just kind of hard for me to judge, but I think I agree with Brett. The effect is so big, so flashy, so impactful, that someone is bound to play it to pretty darn good use. So I'm feeling somewhere in the B range. I'll just go with a flat B to keep it simple right now.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a late game sealer. It really could, but not for this guy. All right,
moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. Who's up next? Is it Will?
It's you, Daryl.
It's you.
It's me. Oh, I knew that. I knew it. All right, next up, we got a Lannister card. It is Frey Armsmen. They are 3 cost, 2 strength, a military and intrigue icon. They have the army as well as the House Frey trait. They are no attachments. And then they read, Frey Armsman gets +2 strength during military challenges for each House Frey character you control.
It's not great right now.
No. Pretty lackluster.
It combines with one of my favorite cards. Campfire Mime.
Oh,
it does
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, I love me some Campfire Mime. But yeah. There really is just better options right now out of Lannister. I mean, that I would pay one more gold for. Literally one more gold will get me a better card.
Well, yeah. One more gold will get you one of those 4 for 5 armies
exactly.
that last cycle.
I mean... And for three gold, I can already play better cards. I don't like this card.
I don't know. I mean, he's a big dumb body, sure, but there's something to be said for big dumb bodies.
I mean, he's a potential big dumb body.
I mean, on his own, he's a 3 for 4 military.
Yeah. And he can still make the intrigue challenge in a pinch if you need him to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right. Cool. I mean, and he is a Frey, and... From you know what I know of the phrase in the books, and everyone else listening to this show except for Daryl knows, there are a million of them in that family. So I especially the way this is worded here, needing other House Frey characters, I really can't imagine this is the only Frey we're getting in this cycle.
I'm
betting we're going to get a Frey kind of theme deck, you know, like Kingsguard or Brotherhood or Tully or whatnot. So and of course, just the more Freys we have available, the better he's likely to get. If I have the capability to have 3 or 4 Freys on the board pretty easily, then this guy starts looking pretty awesome. I'd be willing to pay 3 to be able to just beat face in a military.
Man, he's a big dumb body.
Yep. And does anyone else, though, looking at the art, just think of the Monty Python, the French guys.
I wouldn't have had you not pointed it out.
You're welcome. Now go away, or I shall taunt you a second time.
What are we thinking on Frey Armsman?
Yeah. If it was... I'm going to go ahead and give him a D. I don't like him. I realize that you can win some military challenges with him. I think there's easier ways to do that at a Lannister than to... But hey, maybe there will be a whole bunch of Freys, and like they're all gonna have kick ass abilities, and then it's gonna be like, why not play this guy? Hey, all right, it's the beginning of the cycle, but for now, I don't like him.
That's fair. I'm gonna give him a D. I'm gonna give him a D plus because as I've already said several times, I mean, there's a place for big dumb bodies in this world. Just look at Daryl.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with Daryl as well. He just feels like a D at the moment. He's probably not going to make the cut, despite being kind of interesting. But by the end of this cycle, I fully expect him to be quite a bit better.
I mean, maybe we'll see a badass Marbrand deck where you got all these armies and Frey dudes and you're just whooping ass. I mean, that's cool.
Okay, now it really is me, isn't it?
It is.
It really is.
All right, this time we get a Lannister attachment. Traitor. It's a zero cost. It's a condition. Attached character gains the traitor trait. And while attached characters participating in a challenge, treat it as if its printed text box were blank. This is really unimpressive to me, despite the fact that the art looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just feel like either Milk of the Poppy neutral at one gold is more effective by always blanking it, or something like Motley out of Baratheon. Like, if you're going to look at zero-cost condition attachments that muck with characters, like, Motley's way better than this. Granted, it's a different house.
Yeah.
Lanny doesn't have much like this, but, like, which characters do I really want to blank just during a challenge that I can't just kneel or otherwise control out of Lanny?
The Red Viper?
I guess. But, I mean, that the Viper that you can't kneel, of course, is going to be the Princess of the Sun one, right? Well, if he's already participating in the challenge, which is when Traitor will blank him, then he's already not kneeling to attack. He's already made it in.
But I mean, it's a renown and then protection that I'm concerned about. Okay.
If you can capitalize on the kneel after he's blanked, sure, but...
Here's the scenario. You put it on the Red Viper. He challenges you. You ambush from the plains in Dario Naharis. Bam!
Brilliant. You've just sort of three-for-one yourself.
Three-for-one. Hey, when it's a Prince of the Sun Red Viper, it's worth it.
Yeah.
And then you save with a dude. Womp womp.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the only thing. I mean, what, Dario and Willa Manderly are the only things that care at all about that traitor trait?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is a little unimpressive.
I mean, Milk of the Poppy, you already said it, you know, Milk of the Poppy, that's like, boom, it's there. It's one gold, but I mean, it's still...
I mean, zero to one gold is not a negligible difference.
Right. Well, this makes
especially
you wonder,
in Lanny.
It makes you wonder if there's going to be some play around with the traitor trait, finally. Well, more, I should say.
I would hope so, because I keep looking at it and thinking, you know, if this made them an ally instead, or made them a traitor and an ally... then I would really look hard at this.
Yeah.
So if there's some more stuff that interacts with Traitor coming, then I might pull this off of my D-minus rating that I'm giving it right now.
Mm.
I mean, I'd probably agree with the D.
Yeah, it's not better than Milk the Poppy in a standalone setting, so I will also give it a D.
All right, so back around to me.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we're on Doran Martell now, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, as said, it's Doran Martell, a unique Martell character. He is 3 cost, 4 strength with an intrigue and a power icon. He is a lord. He is prize 2, and he has stealth. And when a prize card is discarded from an opponent's hand, claim power for your house equal to that card's prize value, and he has a learned crest.
Now, hang on. Before we talk about this card, can I just ask one thing? Is Doran Martell supposed to look like the Tales from the Crypt Keeper, or is he supposed to be a fat guy? Because there's 2 different arts for this guy, and he looks totally different.
I mean, he's kind of like a sickly old man who's bound to a wheelchair, effectively.
Yeah. And he has gout really badly. So if I remember right, like, his legs and joints and stuff are very swollen from that gout.
Got the gout?
Yeah.
All right. So nobody knows.
The
artist interpretation.
A 3 cost, 4 strength guy with stealth is nothing to scoff at, even though I doubt.
Yeah, with 2 icons.
The rest of his card.
And a crest? Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of his card is largely irrelevant.
I'd be willing to play him just for that, because, I mean,
what's his competition, at least as far as other copies of Doran go? I mean, maybe you're playing the Noble One to bounce stuff with Gaston Grey if you're going that way, but otherwise, he's not competing against himself at all right now.
No, he's not.
Yeah, and he fits in very nicely on the Martell curve. Especially if they are running any agenda other than Quentin and thus unable to use all those three-cost knights effectively, then bam, Doran really helps you out.
Yeah. And with this guy, you can see a couple of things. One, you can see that, hey, finally, Doran works with Doran's game.
Yeah, yes, nice.
Been waiting for that shit. And also, you can see that this is the last character that we have that has higher strength than printed cost. But this is so far, we haven't had a character so far that we've done yet, have we? Oh, yeah, except for the Frey guys. Oh, the smuggler. That's right, the smuggler. But anyways, you can see that they're still doing the higher strength than cost. That could be another thing that they're trying to do. Maybe they're trying to make that Rob playable.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that was my tidbit on that. I mean, he seems all right. I mean, that strength to cost is excellent for Martell. The ability seems kind of eh, but, man, it's hard. 3 for 4 with an intrigue power is nothing to sneeze at, to
and
quote
stealth.
Will Lentz. And stealth and a learned crest.
And a lord is a relevant trait sometimes, too. I would play him, I think, just based on that. Maybe even at prize 2. I mean, since he's unique and I'm only running one probably anyway, then I would probably do it. If he was non-unique, I don't know that I could bring myself to run 3 like that, but...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Plus, his ability, I don't know. How often do you think that's going to trigger in the course of a game?
Rarely.
I mean, if you're waiting on random discard, sure, but... You know, is this going to push Rings, Matt Lay's champ card to see more play? You just throw a little of High Heart at him and discard whatever they've got that's prized.
Hey, man, I've been trying to build the Martell Learned Crest deck for, like, ever. I'm excited for
it. Yeah, she's learned as well.
Yep.
I'd almost forgotten that. So, yeah, there's some stuff there.
Yeah, I mean, he's solid enough. I mean, that's another unique character that will actually see play for Martell. I mean, that's pretty strong in and of itself.
All right, what are we thinking writing-wise?
I'm going to go ahead and give him a B. I think that he's solid. Ability's kind of eh, but it's not bad. Yeah. And those stats are excellent.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. Probably a B, B minus is pretty good. Just for strength, cost, icons, and stealth.
Yeah, I actually agree there as well. Like I said, I'd play him just based on the stats alone. The ability is just kind of a nice bit of possible gravy.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's all B.
Love gravy.
All right, Durrell.
All righty. Yeah, we're sticking with Martell. We have Spy from Starfall. She is 2 cost, 2 strength with an intrigue icon. She has the House Dane trait, woot woot. She is prized 1. And she reads, while Spy from Starfall is participating in a challenge, characters with more than 1 icon do not count their strength. Wow. Well, I would say wow. Kind of eh on her own. I mean, during an intrigue challenge, I mean, that's not bad. But when you put that green blood vessel on her, what? I'm the only one that loves that card.
Yeah. I mean, you can always give her icons like that and use her a lot like, now my brain's shutting down.
Caitlin?
No, the Lannister, the menagerie, thing from the East.
Yeah, then it's grotesquery.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and use her similarly like that to just negate a lot of incoming challenges if you want. Or you can flip her the other direction and just force through intrigue challenges. I mean, against anybody except, maybe Lanny, who has several gold weenies on the board, or, you know, Doubting Septas or something. Like, you probably just push intrigue through unopposed every turn with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. An interesting move for Martell. Normally they want you to lose icons. Now they want you gain a few.
Yeah, and some of their stuff could give them to other people, like the Green Blood Merchant could potentially give the opponent's character an icon mid-challenge to screw things up.
Yeah. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, and she's not even an ally, which is pretty sweet, right?
Dude, House Dane, it's coming.
Yeah,
it's coming back.
Sweet. Oh, yeah, she's House Dane. I didn't really register that. Okay. Yeah. She's solid. She doesn't necessarily interact with the House Dane gold token theme that we had in the past.
She doesn't at all interact with it.
Well, she wins challenges, which lets you trigger Starfall.
Yeah, you could pump her strength up, and then, I don't know, maybe they're playing Craster, okay? Maybe we got to do something about that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not terribly impressed.
I don't know.
I mean, she's not crazy good, but it's not. That is not a bad ability. Like,
yeah, I think she's pretty respectable. And prized one is not enough drawback to me to worry about it. I mean, unless I got to a point where, you know, literally every character in my deck had prized, then I probably just won't worry at all about prized one.
Yeah. If I had to grade her, I mean, yeah, I'd want to give her more icons if it was me personally. I'll give her a C. I think that she can be good. I mean, I would not be surprised to see her as a one of in a Martell deck just to make sure that you can win some intrigue challenges. I could see that happening, but she's not game breaking.
No, I can't see that happening. I'm thinking more of a D.
Really? Wow.
I mean, she's not even an ally. It's not bad.
I mean, you're right. She could be worse.
she could be. Well, you know, she doesn't have a beard.
I mean, that two cost character slot in Martell is filled already with some good stuff. This is a different type of Martell than I think that we're used to. This is a more aggressive. I mean, this is the House Dane Martell deck. You know what I mean? The House Dane Martell deck is a little more aggressive, a lot more aggressive, really. So, you know, and I'm thinking about, you know, this card in a House Dane deck, not a bad card.
Yeah, I think I agree more with Daryl than Brett on this one. She's not super impressive, but. Her ability is very reminiscent of the specialized challenge from the CCG era, which essentially did the same thing. Anybody with multiple icons didn't count. And that turned out to be pretty powerful. So if there's a little more support for that type of thing coming in this set, I expect her to really shine. As is, I think she's a pretty solid chud. That offers up a different direction if you want to go a more aggressive route and get some card advantage by forcing those intrigues through, and has some nice defensive capabilities. So I'm willing to give her just a very solid C.
Wait a sec. If we gave her an icon, she wouldn't count her own strength. Is that correct?
She would not, but if the incoming character also had multiple icons, then you just negate the challenge completely.
Oh, Burning on the Sands.
Right.
1.1. Ow!
which definitely has some potential right there.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, let's move it on.
I have to admit, I don't remember who's
it's
up
you.
Now.
It's you, Will.
Oh, sweet. Well, this one is a near reprint of a CCG era card that was bizonkers at the time. And I was definitely playing a lot of Martell while this was available because it is just that freaking good. I cannot believe this has been reprinted. You murdered her children. House Martell only. Prized 2. Response, after you lose a challenge as the defender, kneel 2 influence to choose and discard an attacking character from play. Then search the deck and hand of that character's controller for any number of copies of that character and discard them. Then shuffle the deck. See, that's the best part, I think, at the end. You get to shuffle their deck again, just for fun. I mean, you know, so that way the deck's not in order where you know what it is. But, I mean, just seems to be that last little kick while they're down. Because they're going to be down.
I mean, this is an awesome effect. I love Cranial Extraction for Magic.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is every bit of that prize, too.
This card is so asinine. Like, you must be kidding. Like, really? Am I the only one that cares about the casual player anymore? Like,
yes.
This, you have to be kidding. Like, I don't think it's like, this is going to make me just lose or something like that, but that is really good. They get to see your entire deck. They get to know everything that's in there. There's no surprises. And they get to discard every copy of that character. And what if I throw a couple copies of my Riders of the Red Fork in there?
I know. You bastards. It's your favorite card.
God.
That's true. I mean, now keep in mind, it's kind of garbage against Barra. Because all you're doing is putting dudes in the discard piles that are just going to get back.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and there's ways for Targ to get guys back, too. And, but still, I just don't like the flavor of this card.
Really?
I don't. Yeah, absolutely. I don't like the idea of searching another player's deck. I mean, as if the game wasn't slow enough as is, I don't enjoy this card. I realize it is priced, too. It comes with a heavy cost. Don't get me wrong there. Like, you're giving someone two power to do this to them. I understand that. But you're discarding a character, so it is a removal,
the ultimate removal
event. And then you're getting rid of that, every copy of that guy. Not to say that they couldn't save from it or something like that, but still, that I just don't like the flavor of it. I'll just leave it at that.
I mean, I think you're right about time issues, which hadn't really crossed my mind until you said that. The game is generally pretty slow already, and this potentially slows things down even more if somebody wants to stop and familiarize themselves with the opponent's deck as they go find those characters. So, yeah, there is some potential to push games even longer.
All right, what are we thinking writing-wise?
I think this is still an A card. Even giving the opponent two power, the effect is so powerful, and it is a control effect, which really kind of mitigates some of that two power there, since you're removing something they've got on the board. Maybe you can push challenges back through afterward and take it back. I mean, the knowledge is huge. I mean, somebody like Greg or Bruno that can keep track of all that stuff the opponent's got afterwards. Yeah, man, that's just, it's crazy. It is an A through and through.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I mean, removal is fantastic. Now, Martell has things that they want to spend their influence on. I mean, you can definitely make room for this card. Directly removing a problem character from the board, just that in and of itself. If it was just discard that character from play, that's not bad at all. So, geez. Man, I'll give it. I don't know if I can give it. I mean, you're still giving someone two. You're giving them two power, and you have to lose a challenge as the defender. I mean, I don't know. I'll give it a B. I'll give it a B. I mean, that's still really good. Don't get me wrong. But there's other things you can spend your influence on as well that can still move you in the right direction with Martell. Removal is good.
Yeah. I'm agreeing with you on this one. A B is probably what I'm going to have to go give it. I mean, it's strong, but it does cost influence. It is limited because it has to be attackers. You have to lose on defense. It doesn't matter. I mean, if they have multiple copies, like if it's a non-unique card and they already have three copies in play, you're not going to get anyone but your initial target. It's
you
good,
still get the knowledge
good.
If you do that, though.
That's true. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that knowledge is good, and that's one of the reasons I don't like the flavor of this card. I just don't. I don't like this.
Yeah, you know, knowing you're not running Paper Shield right. or whatever.
Right.
Oh.
Sure. Or knowing there's a, or knowing where their saves are at. Oh, it's a Greyjoy deck that's only playing location save. So if there's not a save on the board, I know that they can't Risen from the Sea or something. You know, just the little things like that. And how slow it's going to take. Now, I'm not saying the card is broken. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying I don't like this flavor in this game at all. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Next up, we're moving to House Stark with Caitlin Stark. Unique Stark character, 3 cost, 3 strength, and 3 power icons, Lady in House Tully. She is prized 2. She's immune to character abilities. And she has a response. After Caitlin Stark leaves play, choose a non-army Stark character in your dead pile and put that character into play with a Noble Crest.
Can I just say I'm bummed she doesn't work with your champ card? Cold Hands, since she's immune to character abilities.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. That's funny.
Yeah, Cold Hands, I meant, not Arrogant Contender.
Okay.
Womp womp.
I mean, she doesn't work with Eric Contender either.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah. This Caitlin, huh?
She seems pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, Caitlin's one of the... I mean, there's a pretty high opportunity cost with Caitlin's, because the Lords of Winter when it jumps into play is very, very strong.
Oh, she's so good. But, there's definitely a place for this Caitlin, for sure. Basically she will replace herself, right?
Generally.
Or no, and it's when she leaves play. So if you return her to hand, if you have a way to do that or something.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, if you can retreat her and get her back, if you can call to court her, what's the river plot that returns a card to the top of the deck?
Oh yeah,
I don't remember.
Summer encampment, maybe. I want to try some kind of crazy Shaga stuff that does that every turn.
Search and detain.
Yeah, potentially.
I mean, that could be nice. Maybe, you know, there's a lot of high initiative plots out there. Maybe you're okay with playing it, because then if you hit yourself, maybe you have a couple of things that you're not afraid of returning, like her, or you're trying maybe an opportunity to save your own Mira or something like that. So possibly. I mean, that's a solid ability.
Yeah. There's there's several Stark characters I wouldn't mind having back if they get removed. You know, that my opponent's probably trying hard to get out of the way, like Brienne and Mira.
Yep. Definitely. Well, if you had to rate her.
Yeah, I'm probably leaning towards another B. She's good, but I'm not convinced she's the best Caitlin.
Yeah, that's the tough part for me. You know, I will want to try some goofy combo decks with her, but you know, if I just really want to build a top tier Stark deck, I kind of think I'm going to go with the jumping one instead. So that's pretty tough. I think I'm probably just going to give her. Well, dang, the immune to character ability is also pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, does keep her out of some Neil effects. Dang. I was just going to give her, like, a C+, but the immunity, I think, pumps her up into, like, the B- range.
There's going to be some sweet, janky deck ideas with her. I mean, as a moving piece in that, and I think she's decent. And, I mean, at worst, she dies, and you get to replace her with another character, which that's never a bad thing. She does give him 2 power, but she's immune to character abilities, which is pretty sweet. I mean, that's not a bad ability in of itself. So I'm going to go ahead and give her a C. I think she is solid, but she's not crazy good.
All right. Daryl, you're up next.
Oh, yeah, I knew that. All right, next, we have Show of Force. which is House Stark only. It is an event. It is prized 2. It reads, response. Play after you win a military challenge as the defender. Immediately after the resolution of the current challenge, a military challenge is initiated against the losing opponent with you as the attacking player and your currently defending characters as your only attacking characters.
That's a wordy card.
Yeah. Very wordy. So it must be good.
That's not always the case. But I think this one does seem pretty cool.
Yeah. Is that cool is the word I would use to describe it, yes.
I mean, it's super flavorful. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. The art's pretty nice. And I think it's a way to actually make the Stark defense theme count in a more effective way than some of the other stuff we've seen in the past.
It definitely makes it more interesting.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Prize 2 seems pretty big for this effect, though, to me.
Yes, spinning a card and giving your opponent 2 gold to make an extra military challenge with specific characters they'll be able to participate on your end.
Yeah,
and in a specific circumstance.
Has to have already attacked you. I mean, I'm not saying the situation isn't going to come up, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure it's quite worth that investment for the prize too. I think this probably would have been fine actually with no prize.
Yeah, probably agree with that.
Maybe it's a melee card is what I'm thinking. You know, your Lord Commander, you pull a military into you. I mean, that could be, yeah, that could be really devastating.
Yeah,
that could be really devastating.
Especially if you're playing Siege.
Yeah, that could result in 6 power that turn. I mean, granted, you win as the defender, you win as the attacker with that challenge, and then your own military challenge. I mean, that could be pretty fat.
Yeah.
Anyone is dumb enough to do a military challenge.
Well, in melee,
so if I'm at the table,
someone will do it, probably, yeah. In Joust, that gets trickier, at least as far as if you're playing Siege. I mean, most of the time it winds up getting to a point where it's not even worth me making a military challenge against Siege, so...
I mean, it could put the nail in the coffin in a melee game. It really could.
Mm-hmm.
What are we thinking rating-wise?
For a long time, I've really loved the card Routing the Charge, which is a defensive removal spell. Event, sorry. I've been watching a lot of MTG stuff lately. Anyways, and I've always liked that card. Now, granted, it doesn't have quite the same impact. I mean, this could be better in a Siege deck, for sure. But that card doesn't really see a ton of play. I don't know how much this will see outside. Like, I think this card is a melee card. I really do. You may run into Joust, but I'm going to give it a D. I don't think it's a defining card. I don't think it's really that solid. It's kind of situational.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with Daryl. I mean, it's just not a card that I expect to make a lot of decks.
Yeah, I don't think it'll make a ton. Oh, sorry, Brett, did you have a letter? Or were you going with the same letter as Daryl?
Only a D.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it'll make a ton of decks, but it is a pretty cool, flashy effect that could take some folks by surprise. So I'm willing to give it a C-, I think.
I mean, with a lot of claim to plots, I mean, it could be good. But that event slot in Stark, it ain't getting any easier to get in there.
That's pretty tight.
Like, just saying. There's easier ways to do it without giving somebody 2 power. All right. Brett? No, Will.
No, I think it's me.
Will. It is Will.
Oddly enough, reading the card that... I think, did I read him when we spoiled him?
I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah, Aegon Targaryen, 2 cost, 2 strength, military icon with a learned crest. He's a lord and a king, is prized 1, no attachments, and if you control Yungryph, discard Yungryph from play. Then non-dragon characters without attachments get -1 strength. Sorry. Threw myself for a loop scene, Young Griff, double in a row there as I was reading. But yeah, like we talked about when we spoiled him, I think this is going to be a hoss of a card for Targ.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you have a way to keep him alive through your threat turn.
I don't even know if I care that much about keeping him alive.
Play him again.
I mean, would you play a Targ event that said, you know, marshalling, pay 2 gold to give all non-dragon characters -1 strength?
Yeah.
In a deck running threat and some other burn effects, I think I would probably run a couple copies of that. And Aegon's better because, you know, he has utility on those non-threat turns.
That's true.
And prized one is negligible. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
The art's friggin' sweet.
He is really good.
His horse's head freaks me out.
Yeah, it's a little weird, but the style of the art in general I think is cool. And of course, the angle of the shot and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The Learned Crest is something interesting. Targ's gotten a few of them lately. Haven't really been seeing them run any learned tech, but it gets closer and closer to them being able to do that if they want. It's hard to say much else about him other than I would run a copy, maybe two, in basically every Targ deck now.
Yeah, every Targ burn deck I would for sure.
Yeah, maybe not some kind of Dothraki like Horde, but even in the Horde, maybe I want to run him for Outwit. Since he's got that Learned Crest.
Or, hey, in Melee, maybe you want to run him in your Dragon deck.
Yeah.
You know, lower everybody else's strengths, your Dragons can rock and roll, mm-hmm. and then you have him there for your Outwit turn if you feel like somebody's going to Valor. I mean, he has some good possibilities. Not bad.
Yeah, he kind of is all that in a bag of chips. Mm-hmm. Or at least all that, maybe not the bag of chips. If he had some kind of immunity, then he'd have a bag of chips.
Yeah.
Well, no attachments is kind of an immunity.
It
can't be flame kissed.
No. I mean, it's not immunity. It's no attachments.
I said kind of.
He could still be nightmares.
Right.
Just that sort can't of happen. Something.
All right. So, rating wise, I mean, I'm leaning towards an A for him. He's really strong.
I agree. He's an A. I think he'll basically go in every Targ deck I play. Like I said.
Yeah, he's an A. He can definitely be a staple in the burn deck, just as it is now, not without seeing any other cards in the cycle that they have for Targaryen, but just as it is now, you could throw him in, and he will make an immediate impact, and he will help define that deck type, absolutely.
All right, moving on. Staying in Targ, to another unique Targaryen character, Lysenno Mare, who I absolutely do not recognize from the books. He is 3 gold, 3 strength, Tricon, military intrigue power. He's a mercenary with a response. After an attachment enters play, choose a player. Look at that player's hand with a learned crest. And this guy's also pretty great.
Yeah, knowledge is huge, like we were talking about earlier. And, you know, in the right Targ deck, you get to look their hand every turn.
Yeah, knowledge. So there have been other cards that have been printed that have kind of given a little knowledge, but they've always had kind of a cost associated with them. And the main thing I'm talking about is that shitty-ass Martell card. Oh, God.
Observation point.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean,
come
that is shitty.
Come on. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know. If you look at Targ, they've got Aegon's Hill, which gives you knowledge every turn and a great effect.
Yeah. It's pretty great. I mean, this is not bad. Like,
solid
a Tricon,
body.
Tricon's rule. I mean, he's a merc, but not a ton of things hit him. If people are still rolling Dissension around, you know,
yeah,
Okart
really
hits him.
That, but Okart, for sure.
Yeah.
He's everywhere.
Yeah, especially with Lannis being so popular at the moment.
Yeah.
Even with the Kingsguard stuff, I think most everyone's still playing the ally and merc discarding.
Man, yeah, and that, I mean, and the Shadows Okart is freaking bonkers, but that Okart rules. But anyways, this guy, I mean, that's a neat, that is a neat effect, and again, he is a Tricon, and Tricons rule.
Yeah. The target's a lot of Tricons. Yeah,
they do.
He fits in there. And again, another Learned Crest.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, also, and Brett, I was going to say, I didn't remember him from the books at all either, but the flavor text is the Spymaster was new to Griff, a Lysini named Lysan Omar. So that makes me think, what was the name of the mercenary company that the Griff's plural came back to? Was it the Second Sons?
I can't remember. It's been too long.
Yeah. I can't think for sure now either. But whichever it was, that mercenary company that came back to, I'm betting Lysan Omar is spymaster for those mercenaries.
Probably something like that, yeah.
Since it mentions new to Griff, because he formerly been with that band.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Speaking of with that band, he looks like Dave Navarro.
He does.
Got this little, like, wow, what is that called? It's not a soul patch. It's like a...
Oh, man, I don't know.
I mean, it's like a soul and like, yard.
And, like, he's got black eyebrows, like that black little soul strip, whatever, and then blonde hair. Like, he totally dyes his hair. That guy is in a rock band.
He does do that.
Yeah. Nice. Dave Navarro.
So what kind of
rating? Rating-wise. Yeah.
What?
Daryl?
Oh, man. So the effect, like looking at someone's hand, could be really good, for sure. And a Tricon rules. He is a mercenary, which does suck. Like that, I mean, that can suck. I don't know if he's a B, because, like, he wins challenges, he gives you some knowledge, or he can win challenges, but I'm probably going to give him a C. He is solid, but he's not. I mean, he's not insane. He's not gonna be the backbone of your deck or anything like that. But he can give you some valuable knowledge. And a Learned Crest is always good. And a Tricon.
Yeah, I can respect that. He's probably a C plus for me. He's fine, but kinda like Lester overall.
Yeah, he's pretty okay. I don't know offhand of a hole that he's filling in any Targ decks at the moment, but knowledge is always good. His kind of a flexible body there with all three icons and the crest, so he seems perfectly respectable. I'm sure folks will try him out and everything. So probably just a solid C for me.
Right.
Oh, here you go, Daryl.
Oh yeah. All right, so we have Theon Greyjoy here. He's dual house, Greyjoy and Stark. 2 cost, 2 strength, military power, a lord, an ironborn, and a traitor. He is prized 2. He reads, after a player counts income, he or she must choose and kill a character he or she controls. And he was designed by the 2012 European Joust champ, Stefano Montanari.
The naval enhancement on his power icon.
Oh yeah, naval enhancement on his power icon. Okay, yeah. This card is the tits.
He's pretty sweet.
Like, for real. Yeah. Like this is. I'm having trouble finding a way to describe this. Like this could be really really good. The downside to this. Does not can't overshadow its upside at all. Like, if you're playing it in the right deck, which you will be, he is fantastic. And it's after they count income. Like, I like that timing as well.
And counting zero still counts as counting income for anybody that's wondering. So even if you are choking them out and they are struggling to get that one character on the board, they count zero, and then Theon kills something.
I mean, if you're choking them out, then they probably don't have any characters, and if they do, they probably already died from military claim.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. I think he helps put some added pressure there for sure.
I don't think I play him in a choke
deck. What? Well, I may play him in a choke deck. That's not a bad idea, and definitely in a deck with some heavy removal. Even at especially at a Stark, I should say, this guy is awesome.
Yeah, I'd probably play him at a Stark more often than Greyjoy, honestly.
Really?
Really? I think in a choke deck that's really good. An old way deck.
Before they have a chance to play anything. Like,
yeah, exactly.
They're
so you're
killing their zero characters, and then they play a character.
Well, sometimes they have a character on the board. It happens.
I mean, yeah. I think I would want to play him out of Greyjoy. Not necessarily choke, but out of Greyjoy, so that I can use Agenda Aeron Damphair. Of course, he's, yeah. Theon's already nice with the character agendas, because you can kill your own agenda with him mm-hmm, on your side. True. But yeah, if you've got a repeatable save like Wendemir on the board, and Theon on the board, then that basically becomes, you know, count income, kneel yeah. Wendemir to draw two cards.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, which helps that character agenda a lot, because, you know, while the idea of that draw sounds nice, you know, the opponent just quits trying to kill your stuff so that you don't get it. And Theon means you can keep getting it.
Yeah. I mean, that he's fantastic. Absolutely.
And he's an Ironborn? That's yeah. handy?
No,
Traitor,
this,
not so
this
much.
Is a perfectly... this is, I mean, I want to say perfectly designed. I mean, power-wise, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the test of time treats it. I'm not saying it's overpowered right now or anything like that, but what I am saying is that that is a very, very potent effect. It really is. I mean, there's definitely decks out there that just throw out a bunch of chests and like, oh, I got to kill a guy. That's fine. I'll kill one of these one-cost weenies that I just threw out there. But there are some decks where this could be a really big deal in hitting them. All right, if you had to grade it, what are you giving it? I guess I'll go first. I'll give it an A, because I think that's fantastic. I think that, yes, best Theon ever printed.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
I think I'd agree on that.
I don't think I'd give him an A. I'd probably give him a B.
I get
fine.
That. He doesn't have any keywords other than prize two. I mean, I get that. No crest or anything. I understand.
I mean, I think he's worth the prize too. I'm willing to give him probably like an A minus. You do have to build to account for that a little bit, but that's pretty powerful. And you know, we make analogies every once in a while to Magic cards, which I'm sure three of our listeners follow along with. And you know, Braids was a pretty good card back in the
day. That's true.
Oh, you mean the black one?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about
so
that.
So good, she got banned.
One, yeah. Yeah, she's also banned from being a commander, if I remember right, or an elder dragon general. But anyway, yeah, that forced attrition every turn can really add up against a deck that didn't account for it in construction, like you can do.
Yep.
So, yeah, he's probably a good A minus for me.
I don't know. He compares to Braid, but drawing two cards a turn as compared to one card a turn in Magic makes it
yeah.
less of a insane hindrance. Like in Magic, assuming you're not drawing more than the one card a turn, which some decks just don't, you're just never getting ahead with Braids. Whereas with Theon, you have a chance to draw two characters every turn to where you can start building up.
Right.
Right. And I mean, you can save from it. I mean, it's also a savable thing, but... Mm-hmm. I think for the cost that you're putting into him, I think there's virtually no reason to not put him in every Greyjoy and every Stark deck you make.
You know,
like, if worse comes to worse, you gotta get rid of him, because the stuff you have on the board is too valuable, as opposed to what your opponent has.
You know what strikes me as interesting? I think he's going to put some pressure on the meta, because these character light Bloodthirst decks have been cropping up lately. And I think Theon is a problem for those decks. He's not a response. you know, if they bleed him off the boards quickly, or can otherwise like reset and get him out of the way, then it's probably fine. But if your opponent can wait and drop him after you've got the Viper on the board, who may potentially be your own only character,
mm-hmm.
You know, that could be an issue.
Unless you're power blooding.
Right, right, yeah. You do have Power of Blood as a possibility, and, you know, I usually didn't drop the Viper when I was playing mine the last couple of weeks until I had a dupe, so that gives some leeway as well, but I think he can put some pressure on against that type of deck.
Well, yeah, and I mean, there's something to be said here when it comes down to initiative and playing this guy. Like, your first player, You play your Theon. It passes over to the other guy. Now he has to kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, you've won for one somebody. I mean, well, zero for one, right? Because he's still in play. I mean, whatever. It's good.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, and that's the situation. He's really good. He's like a one-sided march to the wall. If they, assuming they only have like one character, he's really right. Good then.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very, very nice. It will be interesting to see how Game of Thrones can take a card like this for a lengthy amount of time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's definitely not a bad card. Not by any stretch of imagination. I'm just not really willing to give him an A.
I get it. It's no arrogant contender.
He's definitely an arrogant contender.
So few cards are.
All right.
Am I up with the next one?
You are.
Okay. This is Tycho Nestoris. He is a neutral card. He's 3 cost, 3 strength, an intrigue, and a power. And he has a +1 gold modifier. He has the Bravos trait, prized 2, no attachments, and the response, after you count income, pay 1 gold to draw a card. And I think this is the banker that comes and meets up with Stannis, right?
Exactly.
Nice. Kind of an interesting little, I don't know, way to represent that. Kind of a nice medley nod, I think.
Well, and I'm not sure to mention, but he does give you +1 gold. I can't remember if you mentioned that or not.
Yeah, I said he has a +1 gold modifier. So, I mean, I think this is pretty cool. Like, he basically reads beginning of marshalling, draw 1 card, with the additional flexibility of if you've already, say, gotten two or three Golden Tooth Mines on the board and you don't really want the draw but could use gold, you can just take a gold instead.
Yep.
And he's neutral, man.
Yeah.
On top of getting that Jaime last cycle, like, we're getting a lot of really good neutral draw right now.
Yeah. This guy.
Whew.
That's real good.
Me solid.
Yeah.
And again, another card where after you count your income, that's interesting.
I like that. It's interesting timing there for sure. I'm sure with him, it's just kind of to enhance the flavor on Tycho.
Right.
But I dig it. It's just, man, we're getting so much neutral draw. Jaime is so good. Tycho is very solid. Like, what happened to House Strengths, you know? Like, at this rate, everybody is just going to be coming very close to draw capping every turn. Like, I don't know. I don't want just Lanny to run wild because it draw caps every turn and no one else draws any extra cards. I feel like there should be some middle ground in there, but...
there's not.
Yeah. Well, the middle ground, it looks more and more like it's just going to be everyone draw capping every turn. Like, at some point, that just becomes less interesting for me for draw to even be a, like, card mechanic. It makes me just want to say, well, you know what, just do away with all those cards and just make the framework draw 5 cards a turn.
Everyone draws 5 a turn.
Right. I see what you're saying. Part of what I'm seeing and what I'm hoping I'm seeing is we are getting more draw. We are getting easier ways to do that. And we all know, you know, everyone loves draw, like draw rules. But they did introduce the command mechanic. And hopefully there's going to be more command-based, more having less cards at your command and making drawing extra cards kind of a problem. But, I mean, they're also making it super easy to ditch cards out of your hand.
Right.
So
a lot of
maybe not.
Outlets.
And my problem right now is that this character is prized 2, which is his drawback. My problem is that you have to have removal, you know, and it has to be ready to roll.
I mean,
in order to deal with somebody. It's like, you have valor. I understand that.
Yeah, that's
like,
what I was going to say. Who doesn't have valor at their disposal to knock off a few characters?
Right.
All right, what are we thinking for the banker from Bravos? No, he's like a professional wrestler. Because he's the banker from Bravos.
Nice.
I don't know where I'm going with that.
I mean, Those, I mean, that's how the stats are pretty good. The ability's great.
Yeah, I agree.
And you can choose to not. You can choose to take the gold if you need it and not draw the card. Like, there's some real flexibility to be had there. But he is prized too. But he's not an ally.
He is not.
Why? Why is he not an ally?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised about that myself.
I just if any card smells like it should be an ally, it should be this one. But whatever. That's not bad. That's not a bad ability at all. I'm gonna give him a B. Like, I think that he's solid, but he kind of can exceed that level. Like, that's good draw. There's not a negative trait on him. 3 for 3 in freak power, and could give you a gold if you don't want to take that draw. Like, that's pretty good. Prize 2 means, hey, there's only going to be one of them in every deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, I kind of have to reveal. A solid B is pretty much where he's at.
He's, he's great draw, potential resource, solid body. Prize 2, you know, I think prize 2 is the only thing pulling it down from being like an A-minus card for me. And I think that pulls him down in like the B-plus range. I think pretty much everybody wants him.
Yeah. I mean, since it's not a radical effect that's going to like hit your opponent and stuff, it is just drawing you a card. That's why he can't be an A. If he didn't have prize, yeah, absolutely he's an A. You know what I mean? But whatever. Anyways, moving on.
To a plot. This is Seizing the Prize. It is a 4 gold, 10 initiative, 1 claim. And when you claim power for the prize keyword, claim 1 additional power.
Hmm.
Nah. I mean, the stats are awesome. I won't disagree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
4, 10, one silver on trees.
Yeah, that's... Why does it even have initiative that high? Like, come on! They're like, you're obviously gonna, I mean, if this is gonna be one of your 7 plots, you're probably gonna build around that. I'm assuming, unless the meta's playing a lot of prized events and stuff like that, or a lot of prized cards in general. But well, the first thing that comes to my mind with this would be the Blackfish that's coming up, where after a character dies a military claim or something like that, it gains prized, you know, so then you're getting extra. Extra claim out of it, and then that has some nice synergy with Siege of Winterfell. But I mean, in general, could be decent.
The text box there might as well be blank, unless Prize really takes off and becomes super popular, which I don't really see happening for the most part.
Yeah, you've really got to have some way to ensure that you're removing prized cards on a particular turn. And the best way to do that is Valor Morghulis, and that keeps you from playing Seizing the Prize that same turn.
Yeah.
So it's really on the back of those stats, and they are really nice stats. I mean, it's no 4-5-1.
No.
But it's pretty good. I mean, I've been playing a little bit of Stark Knights lately, and having Minstrel's Muse there at that 4-8-1 is so nice, just for the stats. But the power grab, I have to say, is nice as well. And I don't see Seizing the Prize really grabbing much for you. So is it worth it for just the stats?
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
And there's a spot called Take Them by Surprise.
Right, yeah, if you really just want to win initiative on a turn, that's the way to go, and you get an extra gold to boot. So Seizing the Prize is probably like a D? D minus, I think.
Yeah, I'd probably say that, D minus. Maybe a D, because, I mean, it does work well with that Blackfish for...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And, I mean, it depends if there's going to be more cards that give a character... prized one or something as it. I mean, I could see them printing a Stark card that kills a character after you win a military challenge by X strength. I mean, that's what I would do. Like, if you win a military challenge by 4 more strength, kill a character, that character gains prized one. Well, now that character is going to get prize two, essentially. I mean, would it be worth running a plot for it? I mean, it's a 4-10-1. I mean, you get initiative. Initiative can be very important.
Unless you're going to take them by surprise.
And then you're like, yeah. Womp, womp. Or betrayal at the wall, I guess.
Yeah.
Which has been seeing a surprising amount of play. I can't give it a D. Extra power claim could be pretty nice. And with those stats, I mean, those are pretty good stats if you want to win initiative. And there are some people that run high initiative just to win initiative who don't really care about what what the stat is. I mean, that's all taken by surprises. Now, granted, it's an extra gold and an extra initiative. But anyways, I'm going to go ahead and give it a C. I mean, I don't think it's a bad plot. Last card is Crossing the Mummer's Ford. I think this has already been spoiled. Mm-hmm. It's a 3-1-1. When revealed, reveal the top X cards of your deck and add them to your hand. X is the number of river plot cards in your use pile. And yes, it does have the river trait to go with it. So this could be a baller way to get over Riches of the Reach, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
There I mean, you could fill your shit up.
I mean, you can get a lot of extra cards in your hand with this. It's just, is it worth running river plots?
Starts making a couple them rivers. Pretty tempting.
Yep. I mean, Redwind Straits can do some work.
It really can.
Yeah.
And Crossing the Mummer's Ford, unfortunately, doesn't copy the other river plots.
I was going to say, I really hate that it doesn't. Like, I thought that was kind of the idea, and they keep printing some that don't do that. And I realize that is for balance issues. I get that, but it'd be really great if you just printed balanced one that always did that. Like, that's kind of where the synergy comes from. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's city plots that trigger if you don't have any other cities, so I get it.
But, I mean, looking at it, I'd be willing to play it because other city plots river plots do copy it.
Yeah.
I mean, like you mentioned, you can open with Redwind Straits. I would maybe even be willing to play Crossing the Mummer's Ford as my second plot, only get one card off of it, but then be able to follow it up third turn with, was it Shores of Nysar? That reveals the top card and then copies the next plot. So then it copies Crossing the Mummer's Ford. Now I get two more cards on top of that. Then if I want on the next turn, I could use the one that copies any river plot. Then I'm getting three more. And of course, Floodwaters. I probably want to use Crossing the Mummer's Ford fairly early so that I can use Floodwaters on later turns and be able to target it. And copy everything.
Man,
so
yeah. That could be pretty fat. I mean,
thought of paying two gold, two influence for Floodwaters to grab three or more cards that don't count for the draw cap is pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you're on a lot of rivers and. I mean, now we all need to make sure we're running Rule by Decree. Be ready, because there is a shitload of draw coming.
Yeah, it probably needs to make a comeback.
I mean, I mean, I've heard people even ask to see if we get that card restricted because it can be such a big deal. Well, I don't think we can afford to restrict it at this point.
Yeah.
All right. So, if I had to give it a grade, obviously it only works in a river plot deck. But this is the one exception. You know, normally I don't give a card an A whenever it works only in a specific deck. But this one definitely deserves an A. I mean, I've treated just like I treat the city plots, and those cards are A cards. Like, they're great, and they only work with each other. And this is exactly where this goes. I mean, that's that you can just fill your hand up with that. Yeah. I mean, that's really all I can say about it. I mean, between that, I mean, you could do some negotiations, you can run a few river plots, you know, have negotiations for that late game. That could be really good. That could be a nice little mix there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, in my opinion, river plots just aren't as strong as city plots. So, I mean, it's still fine. I mean, it's probably a B card. It's comparable to city plots, but just not as good. It's no negotiations.
Well, yeah, but negotiations does not play well with using the other city plots.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, negotiate. I mean, you know, I think even if you're only running three river plots in your deck, when you're revealing this, you're still getting two, or would it count itself? Would you get three?
It does not count itself.
So you would get two. Yeah. So you would still get two, and then your draw phase, that's four cards you've generated, and an extra two. I mean, that's what the Viper's Bannermen do. Whenever, well, I guess they go out of play, so they give you four, but regardless, like, that's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine.
I mean, obviously it would be better if it would copy a river plot.
Yeah. I mean, I still think it's one of the best river plots, and I think it goes a long way toward making them really playable, like, as a group. There's a couple that I think make good openers, particularly for Knights of the Hollow Hill right now, but it's not that great to keep following them up with rivers. This one pushes the envelope on playing an assortment of them a lot more. Mm-hmm. So and card advantage is good. I think I want to give this like a B right now. I'm gonna give it a play for sure. And if things look favorable, probably push that to a B plus.
Hmm. That's cool.
All right. So, any last minute thoughts about the chapter pack?
I think it's a big one. I think it's gonna shake some stuff up.
There's a good bit of mediocrity with spikes of greatness.
The spikes of greatness, though, are pretty nice.
There are a couple really good ones.
Yeah. I mean, as a whole, man, like, we talk about power creep in the game and things like that. And people talk about how this is kind of similar to how they did doomed cards in the CCG. And I don't know what the doomed cards were like in the CCG, if they were incredibly good or if they had a nice balance. But this, just looking at it right now, and I don't know what's in the rest of the cycle. Personally, I'm a little worried. That's all I'm saying. I'm a little worried. I really don't know what else to say. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to have more cards after a brief break.
I do like more cards. It has been too long.
Props and slops.
Props and slops.
Oh, I got a prop.
Okay.
I got a big, fat prop.
Oh, no.
Recently, I acquired Dark Souls 2, and I bought the Collector's Edition, which rules. There's a little bit of a slop there for my employer. I had pre-ordered it from my employer, and they didn't have it in for the longest time, and I was really worried it wasn't going to be there, and I told them that it was horse shit and that they sucked. And then it came in. And I did not apologize because I don't do that. Just kidding. I was joking when I said it was horse shit, but I was, in fact, a little upset. Anyways, so I got Dark Souls. That's what's important. And the game is excellent. Yeah. And I got a cool statue that goes with it. So.
Well, good for you. Stoked.
Yeah, so play Dark Souls 2. If you're man enough for it, okay? And FFG, keep throwing out art that looks similar to Dark Souls. Like Robert Strong. Is that his name? Robert Strong?
Sir Robert Strong.
Yeah. And Preston Greenfield. Keep doing that. It looks awesome.
You know, that's a good one. I think you just gave me an additional prop nice. That I hadn't thought of. At least I'd thought about saying it when we were discussing the card, but I forgot to till now. And that is that I would like to prop Theon Greyjoy for featuring Jason Engel art, who I have not seen do art for a Thrones card in a very long time. Like a ton of like the Westeros edition, like first set of the entire game was his stuff. So his art just always feels very Game of Thronesy to me, since that was kind of the first thing I was exposed to. So I was pumped to see him do a card again.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure like all those arts are requested, aren't they, by the
I think so.
By the champ, so thanks, Stefano.
Because you got to request on both ears, right, Brett?
Kind of.
Gotcha.
Not really.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever.
For Cold Hands, I got to submit a request, and then I was told the artist wasn't available, and then I was assigned an artist.
Oh.
Aww.
Oh, bummer.
Contender, I was assigned an artist.
Oh. Which is why he didn't actually get put in the car. The artist was pissed that he wasn't their first choice. I'm just kidding. That's not true.
Yeah, I'm in the card on Cold Hands.
Sure you are.
I am.
And you're not the little child of the forest?
No, I'm Cold Hands. Prove me wrong. Right.
Do you have a proper slot?
Not really. I haven't been doing, I mean, nothing that I haven't, we haven't talked, I've talked about before. I mean, Arrow's still awesome.
What about your new home, possibly? That's not a prop?
I mean, I bought a house. It's all, or I'm in the process of buying a house, closing in a couple weeks.
Yep.
So I guess that's pretty cool.
Yep, I'm getting geared up to move in, right?
Yeah. Nice.
So I mean,
yeah.
To move me in.
Oh, shucks.
Can't wait. No. I mean, do you have a spare bedroom? Will needs a place to stay.
Yeah, there we go.
No, yep, thank you.
Rule.
No, thank you.
Bummer.
Nice.
But no, I mean, nothing really. I wasn't really prepared for recording tonight, so I didn't prepare anything.
That's A-okay. Well, you know, what's funny, I didn't prepare much either for Props and Slops, because I really only had one thing on my mind since last Tuesday, and that was finishing Words of Radiance. So for any of you out there that are reading fantasy novels, it's a Brandon Sanderson novel. It's the Stormlight Archive is the series. The first book is Way of Kings. And the second book, Words of Radiance, came out on Tuesday. Sanderson's a good author, and this is a series that has really hooked me. It was actually a real thrill to have one of those novels again that I was just like burning to read. Like, I stayed up Sunday night/Monday morning until 3 a.m. to finish the novel, despite the fact that I had to work the next morning, which is not something I've done in a long time, since I have to get up for, you know, a big boy job these days instead of just blowing off class in the morning and not going to college. So it was really, really nice to have a book that caused that
nice
yearning to read again. So I would highly recommend reading that stuff. It's a really sweet, like, high fantasy series. I think Sanderson has described it as his Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, though for anybody who is now suddenly worried that this is going to go on for 12 books or more and never stop, Sanderson is an absurdly prolific author with multiple books coming out every year. I have no doubt that he will finish this series quickly, as far as novelists go.
I mean, if only girl character from the first book was interesting enough for me to actually want to finish it.
I will admit, yes, Shallan's chapters until about three-quarters or so the way through the first book, maybe 80 or 85% really of the way through, are pretty blah, but I really love Dalinar's chapters, and
Dalinar was really cool.
And I friggin' love Kaladin's chapters. Mm-hmm. Some of the interludes in between, you know, because there's internal breaks into different sections. I forget what they're called. They may be books, like Lord of the Rings did. But the interlude chapters kind of get on my nerves sometimes, because they're generally, like, one-shot POVs.
Mm-hmm.
But the recurring big characters I mostly like. And yeah. Shallan gets a lot cooler in book two, for sure.
I'm sure she doesn't.
Yeah. I don't know. The real story is all Kaladin to me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Dalinar is very cool. I like him a lot, and I like what he's trying to do, and, you know, trying to deal with these visions and stuff. But Kaladin is really what it all revolves around.
Yeah, Kaladin's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to pick that book up. I've heard it's great.
Oh, you really need to. So. Gordon, yeah, I'm racing and texting back and forth about this, that, and the other. So, like, we're both, I think, itching to have more people to talk about it with.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna try to reread the first one and see if I can get through girl characters, terrible chapters.
Yeah, good luck. I mean, it's not horrific, but yeah, you can probably skip the first like three or four of those and probably not even miss anything.
That sounds about right from what I remember from the first time I tried to read it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of 2C1C. If you want to contact us, you can hit us up at facebook.com/2champs1chump or hit us up at 2champs1chump@gmail.com because Google Plus
still a thing.
Google's making it a thing. It has to be a thing now. It's tied to your YouTube account. I guess that's it, guys. Brett, thank you for coming on such short notice.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. And, yeah. Kyle, hopefully we'll be back next week.
Hopefully.
Yeah. He can take as much time as he needs, you know, that kind of stuff. But, thank you, Brett, and we'll make sure to keep you on speed dial in our little black book.
I'll see what I can do in the future. I make no promises. I expect my check to be in the mail.
Oh, it's already in the mail. I mailed it yesterday.
Okay. Yeah,
definitely. So, yeah. Are you going?
Am I going where?
To the danger zone! New York. Unique New York.
Unique New York?
Seashells by the seashore.
Peter.
She sells. Pepper
picked up. pickled Peter? Peppers. I don't even know it to begin with.
Yeah. Me neither.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Peter Piper could peck a pickled peppers. How many pickled peppers could Peter Piper pick?
Penis.
That was vulgar.
Well, I was going to say four, but...
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, how about three, two, one...